Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response of the day for the 14th of Tammuz. This is the Chatam Sofer, who's better known as the Chasam Sofer, on a Kedushin that was engaged in originally as a joke, and then got more serious, and the question was whether the couple would need to get a divorce. When I was growing up, this was always brought as a clear example of things you want to make sure not to do, and of things to avoid, because if the woman is in fact married and she gets divorced, then she's no longer allowed to marry a Kohen. You don't want some, usually a young girl, a teenage young woman, you don't want her to all of a sudden have some of her options cut off from her. So this apparently happened in this time as well. This is the Chasam Sofer in Chelek Gimel, the third part, in the Evan Hazar part, Aleph, in Simon Pei, in responsum number 80. And his responsum that he wrote on the 14th of Tammuz of Tav Kuf Ayin Tet of 1819. Okay, so the story seems to have been, and a lot of times in these tshuvot, they don't present the story at the beginning because the two correspondents know what they're talking about, but we have to sort of piece it together after the fact. So the story in this case seems to have been that a young man and a young woman were joking around, and we'll see that they were joking around. It wasn't his ring. He grabbed it from somebody else, and he said, I'll give it back to you. So that's going to be an issue. And then he said, let's, and they were sort of playing at having a kiddushin, playing at a betrothal. And so he, not only did he say it, but he said to the whole group, everybody say it with me, Hare at Mekudesh, and that's what they're doing, Hare at Mekudesh. And then, here, and this is on the last day of Pesach, and the testimony had said that what happened was that the young man's uncle saw what he was doing, and he breaks in, and he says, don't you say Lee, don't you say that you're Mekudesh to me, don't say that. So, and he said it in Yiddish, Zog nicht li, don't say li, that's three words. And then the young man answered four words, which said, it said in Yiddish, that I'm going to do it to annoy you. Right, I'm going to say li. Right, according to the testimony, though, he only said three. He said, Ich zog you li. Ich zog you, I will yes say li. Harei Mekudesh li. And that means that there are six words were said between the time that he said Hareat Mekudeshet and the time that he said Li. This is important because there's a whole discussion in Halacha about what counts as being a Toch Kedei Dibur, as being connected to the same statement. And so statements in Halacha matter. So here, if he only said Hareat Mekudeshet, that will be one question we'll have to deal with, whether or not that counts as her being considered Mekudeshet, which means separated from all other men, meaning the process of Kedushin in Halacha is where she agrees that she will not have relations with anybody else as long as she is Arusa to this man, as long as they have this relationship. So if he says Hareat Mekudeshet but doesn't say Li, does that work or not? Leaving that aside, if the Li came within enough time to be considered part of the original statement, then that whole question doesn't arise, because he said Hareat Mekudeshet at least. So in this case, he said Hareat Mekudeshet. The uncle intervened and said, don't say Li, and he said, I absolutely will say Li. So that is, in the Yiddish, six words. It is well accepted among poskim, among halachic authorities, that as long as the hefsek, if the break in between two statements was more than a toch kedei dibur, they don't connect to each other. Now, this is a question that has many, many implications, many, many areas. We're going to deal with it briefly here, but I would just point out that when we talk about the length of four words or three words or whatever it's going to be for a toch kedei dibur, we'd want to wonder about the person giving indications that he or she has stopped speaking, as we'll see as we go on, meaning if somebody happens to speak slowly, their toch kedei dibur will be much longer than somebody else's who speaks more quickly. That's going to be a relevant consideration here, because we want to try to figure out if the young man, when he interrupted himself, was stopped, had he finished at Hareat Mekudesh, and didn't intend to say Li, or didn't he intend to continue? Because if he intended to stop, then Toch Kedei Dibur issues become important. But if he didn't intend to stop, then it might not become important. So that's going to be part of what goes on here. But there's a basic assertion in Halacha that if somebody completes a statement and does not start again within Toch Kedei Dibur, then the other statement is considered completed and for whatever ramifications that is. So let's say I make a bracha, and it's the wrong bracha, I might be able to correct myself within a toch kedei dibur, and say, I didn't mean to say that, I meant to say this, and that will have a different impact than if I come back a minute later and realize that I made that mistake. So, Chasam Sofer says, toch kedei dibur is the amount, and more than that, you can't connect two things together. But the Chasam Sofer says, that's talking about edim. We're talking about witnesses. When one says something within a toch kedei dibur of the other, and that they can be considered one testimony together, that's what we're talking about. So let's say one person says whatever the testimony is, and another person says, and I agree, that might need to be a toch kedei dibur. But that, he says, is not true in general. We don't generally link two different people's words and two different people's statements to say they're mitzarif in terms of the question toch kedei dibur. As we see in the Gemara, it says that if, let's say, one person says, Hareini Nazir, I will be a Nazir, and somebody else says, and me too, so there we don't connect them to each other unless they're in a toch kedei dibur, even then if he's passing by. And so he says, no, that might be different because they don't have any obvious connection. But here, when one is asking a question, the other one is answering it, so maybe that will still be considered helpful in terms of defining a toch kedei dibur. Or not defining a toch kedei dibur, meaning it might be that we'll say that it doesn't get into the question of toch kedei dibur yet, because since they are talking about the same issues, there's actually no break, even though they get off the actual topic. One of the central questions of the toch kedei dibur issue that the Chasam Sofer raises is whether, in fact, it's important here, because there are cases in halacha where, let's say, somebody's giving testimony and one of the litigants interrupts to argue with him about it, and then he argues back, that will not necessarily affect his toch kedei dibur status, meaning, let's say, he's telling a case, I saw so-and-so borrow money from so-and-so, and he intends to continue speaking, and the litigant who doesn't like what he said jumps in and says, it's not true, and they go back and forth a little bit, and then he comes back to his discussion of what he was planning on saying, that would not be rendered null and void, meaning with witnesses, the problem is that once the witness stops speaking, he's not really allowed to add to what he said before, even if it's explanatory in many cases. So here, if he's speaking and he means to say something more, and he tells us after the fact that he meant to say something more the whole time, but then the litigant jumped in on him, so that will not be a problem of toch kedei dibur. Here too, therefore, you might say that there's no problem of toch kedei dibur because he had not seemed, lo nireh klal sheshatak milomar li mnei shehefsiko. It didn't seem like he had stopped speaking. We'll get back to this later because it's going to turn out that we're not sure about that. There are many witnesses who thought he never meant to say li, which would then help out. So we'll get to there in a second. But, I'm sorry. It's never around. That's what we're saying right now. The Chasam Sofer says it's not that he didn't get to say li because the uncle stopped him. It sounds like, from what everybody said, that he had actually, in fact, finished. So once one finishes, toch kedei dibur is not the issue with a testimony or something like that. So then he finishes a statement, so then the statement is over, and even if they continue in toch kedei dibur and for testimony and certain other things, it doesn't help. So here too, since it sounded like he finished completely, and there are two witnesses who say that when he went on and said, yes, I'm going to say li, that was simply because he was angry with his uncle for jumping in and saying something in such an annoyed way. So to get the uncle back, he said, no, I will say li. But that we have every reason to think, they had every reason to think, that he never intended to say li at the time. Besides, which Chasam Sofer says, the whole idea that toch kedei dibur, you can adjust what you originally said, is when that toch kedei dibur comes to elaborate upon what the person said and meant. But here, both the chatan and the kala are saying in court that they never meant any of this. They never meant it seriously. They meant it as a joke. So if they mean it as a joke, and so we doesn't help us in halacha. I mean, if a man and a woman or teenagers have kiddushin, boy gives a girl a ring, says Hareini Mekudeshet li, and then after they say, no, we were just joking, in halacha we don't allow that to happen. That's because of the concept of dvarim. It's not that we don't want it to happen, it's that we deal with it as if a real wedding, a real marriage had occurred, because in halacha we worry about the issue of dvarim shebalev inam dvarim. That in, again, there are exceptions, but in most cases, the fact that somebody does X act And then afterwards says, no, I didn't mean X act. I meant it in this way. But that's not the way that most people do that act. It's not the way the act itself demonstrates itself. Then we say that the intentions of the people cannot be used halachically to define the act. So here, where they're claiming that it was a joke, and that he never, and therefore, and the witnesses are saying he never meant to say Li until, he never meant to say to me until the uncle stepped in. So there he, the Chasam Sofer is saying that the question of Tocha Dibur or not Tocha Dibur isn't really relevant, isn't necessary to even get into, because he thinks that it's clear that he had stopped. And then the question will be, if he just said Arayat Mekudeshet, now he says it's a joke, but we can't pay attention to that. So now the case becomes, if a man says to a woman, Harayat Mekudeshet, does that create a Kiddushin or not? And he doesn't say Li, he doesn't say to me. That's going to be the question, because according to the Chasam Sofer, we can ignore the Tocha Dibur issue, because that Li wasn't, because the statement was finished at Mekudeshet, and it was only because the uncle jumped in that he then said something more. So when somebody says something more afterwards, even if it's almost immediately afterwards, but it was never intended as part of the first statement, that's not allowed. That would be a case, that's what's called in testimony cases, Kevan Shehigid, Shuveinu Chozer Magid. Once a person says something in court of and of legal standing, and at the time they said it, that's what they meant to say, then they can't come back and change it. So if somebody meant to say, meaning, when it comes to bracha, let's say, if I Tocha Dibur changed my bracha, it's because I really meant to say that bracha originally, and then I got messed up. But if somebody gives testimony in court, they finish their testimony, and then they want to change it, we don't allow that to happen, because we don't allow that to happen. Here too, the statement was, Harayat Mekudeshet, and they claim it was a joke. We can't pay attention to that claim it was a joke, but we can use that claim it was a joke as evidence of the fact that the statement had been ended at Harayat Mekudeshet. The uncle stepped in. That got the kid to say Li. We can not pay attention to that Li, according to the Chatam Sofer. So the next question will therefore be, what happens if somebody says Harayat Mekudeshet to a woman? A man says to a woman, Harayat Mekudeshet, you are. The English word is often used as betrothed, but what it really means is, you are agreeing now that you will have, that we will have a, you will be my exclusive to me, that you will only have relations, marital relations with me as a husband, until such time as this relationship ends, as this Kiddushin relationship with us. That's what Kiddushin does. And so when he says, Harayat Mekudeshet, but doesn't say Li, he hasn't directed the statement. So the Shulchan Aruch Chasam Sofer points out, and Siman Chaf Zayin of Evin HaEzer says that as far as Allah is really concerned, essentially, we shouldn't have to worry about this. The Ramah, though, glosses it and says there are those who are stringent about this and say, no, we have to worry that maybe there's a Kiddushin, and therefore, assuming they don't want to stay together, and if they want to stay together, we just have them do another Kiddushin to be sure. So when they don't want to stay together, they have to, lechumra, dissolve a marriage. And when you lechumra dissolve a marriage, that means that she cannot marry a kohen afterwards. The question at hand, as Chasam Sofer points out, is whether or not the lack of a li completely invalidates the ceremony. And the reason would be, Tosfot and Kiddushin say that if you don't have a li, then we don't know how to direct the statement. And the reason we don't know how to direct the statement, Tosfot says, is because it does happen that people are mekadesh, women are mekadesh women on behalf of their friends. This is allowed in halacha for sure. If Joe says to Jack, please go mekadesh, be mekadesh so-and-so to me, and Jack goes and says to so-and-so, Joe would like to be mekadesh you. Are you willing to be mekadesh to Joe? And she says, yes. He says, all right, hare I mekadesh le Joe. That works in halacha. That being true, then when he just says hare I mekadesh it, it leaves us with no knowledge. There's a whole long discussion here that I have left out for the sake of space and time. But if we have, it leaves us with no knowledge based on the act of who she's being mitkadesh to, who it is being mitkadesh her, and therefore we don't treat it as a valid kiddushin because we need a directed kiddushin. That would mean then for these two, for this young couple, where they were joking around by the in their claim, and we assume that. We non-halakhically, in our non-legal world, probably assume that they're telling the truth, but in the halakhic world have to worry about what the act looked like, because so we're saying, well, if there's no li, and without a li, it's not directed because Tosfos says that sometimes people are mekadesh women on behalf of their friends, then we could say we don't have to worry about anything here. And that's what the Shulchan Aruch says, but there are machmirim the other way. There are those who are stringent the other way. Like I said, there's a whole long discussion of this because It might depend on, let's say they were engaged beforehand, what we call engaged, which in halacha is called mishudechet. They had announced an agreement to get married. So then maybe, even without the li, we can assume it's him that she's being engaged, that she's being betrothed to, that she's having kiddushin with. And there's a whole back and forth in the achronim, but then the chasam sofer says, he thinks that the truth is nowadays, when, even if we hold like the Ramah, that we have to worry about it, but we nowadays don't require an engagement ahead of time necessarily, but in our midinot, in our countries, wherever we are, everybody knows and everybody agrees, it always happens, that when people get married, really married, seriously married, they always announce it ahead of time. They always have an engagement, right? They always have a shiduchin, and they always have preparations and all those kinds of things. So that would suggest that if they didn't have that, then if he says Arayat Mekudeshet, we wouldn't have to worry about it so much. On the other hand, he did say there was Arayat Mekudeshet, and here's the other problem. In their same countries, nobody does it by shaliach anymore, right? It doesn't happen that much anymore that people get married through a messenger. So therefore you could say, well, he said Arayat Mekudeshet, even though they're not engaged, but nobody says it for Joe, you know, for somebody else, and therefore maybe that's obvious. So the Chasam Sofer holds that since people always have Shiduchin when they're going to get married, when they're really going to get married, so that would suggest that Harayat Mekudesh, it means we don't have to assume that it's to him. There is the countervailing pressure of that people also never get married by a messenger, and therefore you might say, though, even without the word Li, it's obvious to him. But he says, since the witnesses all claim that it was clear to them that this was a joke, and there's also some evidence, some concrete evidence it was a joke. The concrete evidence of the joke was that he said to them as he was about to do it, Zogt ala mit harayat mekudesh. Everybody say it with me. Right? So they were all saying it together. And one of them had said to him, you know, you should be careful because if that was a gold ring, he was using apparently something, the other kind of ring, that was a gold ring, she would be yours, because they didn't realize the truth that any ring that has some value to it works, but they thought you had to use a gold ring. So they clearly were thinking, since you didn't use a gold ring, they were thinking, so those are two pieces of evidence that this wasn't serious, it was a joke in their eyes, and therefore that should help that when he just said Harayat Mekudeshet and not Mekudeshet Li, we can't say these are your dayim mochichot, that the words prove themselves even without the exact identifier. So that would be another reason to help out. So he says, I wouldn't have relied that on its own, because the poskim, because the Rishonim think that Yadayim Shena Mechichot might be okay, right? Even if you have not exact firm proof for various reasons. And here the fact that people are claiming there was a joke shouldn't help me out, because then we could say that even if he had said Arayat Mekudeshet Li, but all the witnesses agree that it was a joke, that we would ignore it. And the Chasam Sofer says, V'chalino lano livnot heterim al kayotibel. We're not willing. He thinks we shouldn't be willing to allow young women to ignore kiddushin that they had by virtue of that. So therefore, he's sticking with the question of whether they were yadayim or not, whether the kiddushin was well enough identified as kiddushin to this man, because if it wasn't, then we can argue that it's not a valid kiddushin because it's not linked enough to this man. Then he's just saying that he's adding that even if it was a good identification, for the various reasons we've gone through, that despite their not being engaged, nobody gets engaged with a shaliach anymore, but he's not going to rely on that. He's going to have to add something more. So he's going to add another piece to this as well, which we'll get to in a second. But just to pause and make sure that we understand where we are, the people writing to Chasam Sofer had hoped that the way out of this marriage was to say that there hadn't been a li with a netoch kedei dibor, and since there hadn't been a li with a netoch kedei dibor, they were worried about whether it's five words, six words, and whether that was enough to be a netoch kedei dibor, but since it wasn't, they thought that made it clear that it wasn't a full marriage. Chasam Sofer, his first comment is, he doesn't think that you'd have to worry about whether it's netoch kedei dibor or not, because the evidence is that the young man, when he said it, meant to stop at the words Arayat Mekudeshet, and once you stop, you don't have to worry about the netoch kedei dibor issues. But then that still leaves the open question of whether just his having said Harayat Mekudeshet should qualify, because the Ramah has a Chumra that even saying Harayat Mekudeshet is a problem by virtue of the fact that nobody that it could be considered a Yad HaMochiach, it could be considered well enough identifying who the Mikdash is, since people don't tend to do it on behalf of today. People don't tend to do it on behalf of their, on behalf of others, on behalf of friends. So even though it's also true, people don't tend to get married without having had an engagement first. Those are competing issues. But he thinks that by virtue of the testimony that it was a joke, and the issue of he thinks that in our times you'd need a li in terms of, even according to the Ramah, you would definitely need a li. Therefore, he thinks there's some room to allow. But he goes through a whole bunch of, there's a long, long pieces about this question of Yad HaMochiach, of how well, how clearly identified it has to be. With all that, he thinks that most, really just about all the earlier authorities agreed that if it's not a li, you have a problem. It's not a good valid condition. There was a Maharit that said that as well. Then he found, after he'd written all of this, he found that the Beis Yosef had a tshuva that agreed with him, which is very exciting, but he also found that there are Rishonim who agreed with the Ramah's Chumrah, and therefore he's not fully settled yet. And he says, the Beit Shmuel says that he doesn't really agree with this Ramah. He thinks that leaving out the word li should be on its own enough to invalidate a marriage. But even though he thinks that, he says you need to find some other reason for leniency. You need a kula achera. You need more. Right? In other words, he's willing to pass it against the Ramah, but he wants one more thing. So this happens in halacha a lot. You have a topic, you have a complicated issue, you have a distressing result, and if you could chip away at it and say, well, this idea that I have, I think it's a valid idea, but it's not strongly enough established that I would set up a whole halachic conclusion on its basis. Something to keep in mind, right? That it's not only I have an idea that would push in that way, it has to be an idea that pushes in that way that I feel confident enough of its rightness, of its plausibility, that I'm going to allow myself to base my halakhic ruling on that. The Beit Shmuel, in commenting on the Shulchan Aruch, is saying that even though he thinks the Ramah, fundamentally he disagrees with the Ramah, fundamentally he thinks that the lack of a li should suffice to mean it's not a marriage, he wants people to find, he says people should find some other kula. So the Chasam Sofer is now going to find another kula to add to this one. And in our case, that kula is going to be that the person who did the Kiddushin, the young man who did the Kiddushin, says it wasn't his ring. So whose ring was it? There was another girl around, and she also says, yeah, I was there, and they grabbed the ring from me, and they said they'd give it back. And he's given it back. So the Chasam Sofer says, his first question was, he had a whole discussion, but, and this is going to come up again later in this Chasam Sofer, these ideas of when he's willing to say what. He says he had a whole idea about whether or not they're having grabbed it from her as a matana almanat lahachzir, as a gift, on the condition they give it back, whether or not that qualifies or doesn't qualify. He had a whole discussion about that, but the person writing the letter had mentioned a sefer that had a whole discussion, and the Chasam Sofer wasn't right then in possession of that sefer, and therefore he couldn't read it and learn it and go through that man's arguments and see whether he agreed with them or not. And therefore the Chasam Sofer says, so I didn't want to get into that, which is, to me, interesting and fascinating, because the Chasam Sofer is a well-established gadol, and he's already thought through these issues, and I assume, that he knows them well and has seen many, many of the sources on this, but by virtue of the fact that this other sefer, which he clearly respected, had a discussion of it that he had not yet gotten a chance to see, he didn't want to pursue that line of reasoning for fear that he would miss something that other sefer had raised. And therefore, he wants to add something, but he's not going to add the lack of ownership of the matanah al-achzir. So he says, maybe I can say that the ring didn't really belong to him. So the problem is that the ring didn't really belong to him. That's what the band is saying. It didn't belong to him. He grabbed it from that girl, and she's saying they grabbed it from her, and they said they'd give it back. And that's not a matana. It's actually a brazen theft. And maybe that's enough to say it didn't belong to him. If it didn't belong to him, then we also don't have to worry about the kiddushin. So one problem is that in the Chasam Sofer's time, it was common to assume, to say, that there is a chazaka, there is an established halakhic assumption that items in a person's possession belong to them. That's one problem. Another problem is we think that in halakha, people don't declare themselves to be thieves or burglars or robbers or highwaymen or anything like that. And therefore, when he says, I just grabbed it from her, maybe we're not allowed to believe that. And maybe also, since it's so serious an issue, if a woman thinks she's unmarried when she's actually married, because it'll turn out that that means that everything she does later in terms of a marriage is actually adultery, and we're worried about that, maybe we should say that as soon as they grabbed it from this girl, even though they told her they'd give it back, maybe that was considered a yeush bali, maybe we can consider her to have despaired of getting it back, and that would mean then that it wasn't hers anymore, and it would help us in our discussion. So Chasam Sofer says, first of all, since they all agree that they grabbed it, but it was on Chol HaMoed Pesach, Chol HaMoed Pesach, not the Shavish Pesach, Chol HaMoed Pesach, at a time of celebration and joy. So that's not theft in the sense that we could say we don't believe him anymore. There's a Gemara in Sukkah that talks about this, the Tosafot in Sukkah that talks about the fact that part of the celebration, certain celebrations, happened at weddings, happened on Chagim, on holidays, was that people would grab things from each other, and it was considered part of the party, part of the celebration, and therefore, the point is, it's not considered him saying about himself, and I'm a bad guy, I'm a thief, because it wasn't considered theft in that way. People used to damage other people's horses, and they would be putter, because it was all considered part of the wedding celebration. Things happened. It was fairly rowdy, fairly raucous. He's not saying that's good, he's not saying it's right, it's not saying it should happen, he's just saying that would therefore mean that when the person says, this is what's happening, you don't have to say, oh, we don't believe you in court because you're declaring yourself to be a bad person by saying this. That would also mean that we don't have to think that there's any yeush here because she's going to assume she's going to get it back because a simcha doesn't allow stealing it and taking it forever, it allows taking it as part of the joy, and then after the party is over, everybody gets everything back. If that's true, then she didn't have yeush, so it still belonged to her in the sense that she was the original owner, this other girl, this third party. And so he's got something in his hands, but it didn't belong to him in the sense that he'd taken it from her, and we believe him about this because, why do we believe about this? Because he's not declaring himself to be a rush, he's not making himself into an evildoer by saying it. That still leaves the question of, don't we say that things that belong to people, things that are in people's possession belong to them? We commonly today, I think some people say, possession is 9/10 of the law, but the Chasam Sofer is aware of people who have, that was an halachic assumption as well, that we halachically assume, and that would mean, if we have a halachic chazakah like that, if we have a halachically established assumption like that, then that would mean that when he says it wasn't his, he's trying to break a chazak, and he might not be able to, and then we'd have to assume that the ring was his, and therefore, that wouldn't be a snif l'hakel, that wouldn't be an additional way to be lenient about this case. But he says, I've already written a book about chazakot, and it's a long book. He says, we don't have it here, but he didn't like present it. He says there that the only chazakah that I see in the Torah are chazakah created by a minhag, by a common thing. So let's say a woman shows up in a certain place and she has a little boy and he's riding on her shoulders and it seems like she's his mother, right? Even just that is evidence enough that we would assume she's his mother, and without intervening evidence, without if they were to later get married, we would assume that that was an arayot, that was an incestuous relationship, and we would in court put them to death on the basis of the fact that we had assumed that she was the mother of this child. So she'd have to prove that she wasn't his mother in some way to avoid that. That's a chazakah in halacha. Another chazakah, which the Chasam Sofer says is a lesser halacha, is that we've seen something that happened in a certain way, and we assume that it stays that way until we know that it's been changed. So for example, if let's say there's a mikvah to dip in, to remove ritual impurity by going into it, and we are allowed to assume that until we know that it's changed, we're allowed to assume that it is full. So there's 40 sod in the mikvah. We don't have to assume that it's changed and worry about it until we find out that it's changed. You want to check it often anyway, because if you find out that it's been changed, then you never know how far back it was changed. So there are reasons to check these kinds of situations. But that's another kind of a chazakah. But the whole idea, and that he says in that chazakah, another example of that would be what's called a chezkat marakama in money cases. When I have well-established possession for one person of some item or some object or some piece of property, and then somebody else claims that it's actually his or hers, the reason why the first person, the burden of proof is on the second person, because there's a chazakah that it belongs to the first person. But that chazakah is not because in general, whatever is in somebody's hands is theirs. It's because we have a chazakah, we've already established that it was theirs at some point, and we don't change that until such point as we know that it's not theirs. But the idea that just because something is in somebody's possession, in somebody's hands, that it must belong to them, such that we wouldn't believe this guy who says, it's not mine. So the Chasam Sofer says, I don't know where this comes from. I don't know where people get it from. In fact, when we say, Amotim Chavir Olav Araya, the Gemara says that it's a Svara, that we say that one person wants to claim that an item in somebody else's possession that is his, and that person has a burden of proof. The Gemara actually says that it's a Svara, it's our logical construction of reality. But it's not a firm Chazaka that anything that belongs to anybody, that is in anybody's possession, belongs to them. That will help us out here, because the Chasam Sofer can then say, so I think that this will help me say that since the husband, the man, and this third-party woman say it wasn't his, so in addition to the whole question about the fact that he didn't say Li, and he has a form of Harat Mekudeshet, which the Chasam Sofer is saying in his times he thinks basically doesn't qualify as being directed enough to create a Kedushin. Another piece of it is he thinks here we can doubt whether or not this ring was actually the young man's, and that would therefore the two of them together would satisfy the Beit Shmuel's idea that we can only go against the Ramah about the fact that the Harat Mekudeshet might work if and as long as you have another Snif L'Hakel, you have something else helping with the leniency. The most remarkable part of the Tshuva is that the Chasam Sofer says he thought of all this and he meant to write it all down, and this is what he assumed he was going to say, and then things happened and he didn't get around to writing the Tshuva for 10 weeks. And then he wrote a little bit of it, and then other issues came up, and then another 10 days went by. And it happened a few times to him. Until such point, and here's the remarkable thing, the Chasam Sofer will take this as a sign. The sign is that there's something wrong in what he's saying. So he's sharing this tshuva now. He's saying, it's not a psak of mine. I'm not willing to pask in this way because I think I've had enough sign of a sign that says I shouldn't be pasking and ruling this way. He still holds this way, but that I can't trust it. So therefore, I'm not going to deny telling you my thinking on this because I'm not going to deny you Torah that came to my mind. But I'm not pasking, so if you want to pask like this, you have to find people there who will say, yes, the Chasam Sofer is right on these issues. We are going to pask on this on our own authority, not the Chasam Sofer's authority. So you have a remarkable tshuva about two people getting themselves into trouble by joking around. There are times when it's not good to joke around. The uncle doesn't help things by stepping in. There's a question of whether Harat Mekudeshet is directed enough to create a Kedushin. That's a Ramah. Chasam Sofer doesn't think it should really apply anymore. He seems to follow Beit Shmuel that it shouldn't really apply, but wants a Snif L'Hakel. He wants something else added on. That added on was, there was evidence here that the ring didn't even belong to the kid. So for all that in the 19th century, people assumed that things that were in people's possessions belonged to them. Here in this case, Chasam Sofer says, we have enough evidence that it doesn't belong to him, and that Chazaka isn't a real Chazaka, that we can put those two together to allow them to not be married, to say that the wedding was never valid, the condition was never valid, and to leave them separate, although, then he says, but the events that occurred that stopped me from bringing this letter to your attention, bringing these ideas to your attention, make me think that this is not something I can be posketing, and I leave it to you to deal with. And that is a response of the day for the 14th of Tammuz, the Chasam Sofer, on a joke Kedushin. Take care.